Kia ora and welcome to the Athlete Development Show podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Harrison, sports scientist, coach, and researcher focused on the developing athlete. On this episode, I'm speaking with Brian Shelley, head coach and head of football at St. Kentigan's College here in Auckland. He's got over 25 teams at the school, starting from year 7 right through to year 13. So large range of interests, of skill levels, and therefore a program that needs to be very wide-ranging. Brian's in the school football scene. We know there's a bit of friction between school and club at the minute here in New Zealand, and so we dig into that on the show. Brian gives us his approach and framework around developing young footballers through a school pathway. He draws on some of his experience with over 20 years playing pro football in Ireland and the UK. So we hear about that and how that's influenced his philosophy. And he talks a lot about how he believes in empowerment, giving the game back to the kids, including the kids in the decision making, and why he believes that's such an important and successful approach when it comes to developing young footballers. So I really enjoyed this discussion. It's always good to sit down with someone who spends a lot of time with children and really understands what it is that they need at different levels of their development. So let's do it. Let's dig into my conversation with Brian Shelley. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I have listened to some previous episodes. You've had some pretty smart people on the show. So yeah, hopefully I can share and articulate my experiences in the best way I can.
Absolutely. And we've spent a little bit of time at St. Kent's, a school here in Auckland, a little bit of support that I've been giving. And that's where your post is at the minute, working within the football program. And to be honest, like the time that I spent with you was not only useful from my point of view and sharing my ideas, but actually I learned a lot about how you experience football on the ground. And I think, you know, that's where some real useful information can come from. So I think that'll be awesome to dig into today. So why don't you share a little bit about what you're doing at the school and anything else that comes to mind from your point of view?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I'm really fortunate to have a full-time role in the sport that I love, in the sport that I've grown up playing as a professional football player, and then I've managed to transition into the coaching space. So really, really lucky to be at a college like St. Kentigan College. Great facilities, awesome kids. So I head up the football program. It's a reasonably big program. Last year we had 29 football teams across two different strands, really, or three strands maybe, social and competitive. And there's obviously a group of students striving to be better and to go as far as they can in the game. So we look to cater for all them students.
So what ages do you pick them up at? Because St. Kent's has got a couple of different campuses. And so they're coming into your program at year 9?
Year 7.
Right? Year 7,
yeah,
right.
We have an intermediate school on site. There is a boys' school and a girls' school. So, but yeah, they kind of come under my umbrella in year 7 once they get to the Pakaranga College. Yeah, St. Kent's. Yeah,
it's about year 7, isn't it? 11.
Yeah.
11 or 12. Cool. All right. So big program, lots of kids.
Big program, lots of kids, but yeah, really lucky with the facilities we have. We're able to provide some really cool pathways for the kids. And yeah, my job ultimately is to get as many kids as possible playing the game. And, you know, I do have a big focus on trying to achieve that. And then I think my next challenge is keeping them all in the game, which is not easy with so many football teams. But yeah, really enjoy what I do and try to make a difference.
We spoke prior to pressing record on this one and we talked a little bit about the pathway. And I think if nothing else, the pathway is a big challenge, not only in football, but across youth sport in New Zealand and the world these days. But for you,
considering you pick kids up at year seven, age 11, have them right through to the end of college, high school.
Yeah.
How do you think about transitioning through that pathway?
Yeah, I think it's difficult for young players, boys and girls. There's a lot happening in the football space. You know, we offer quite an extensive program, but I'm quite aware of what happens also when the young players leave the college. There's different environments they go into, so they've got a lot to navigate. You know, 90% of the players within my program would also be involved with club football, and they would have requirements to attend, you know, 3 evening training sessions as well as a game on the weekend. And I think as coaches, we're probably quite guilty of just looking at our environment and only focusing on that. So I've tried to look at it from a different lens, really, and try kind of structure my program so it helps the young players navigate both club and school. Because I think there's a lot of outside noise at the moment for young players, particularly them players more in the performance phase, where they're probably, you know, being told this is what you have to do to be successful. This is where you have to be playing if you want to be spotted. So that's quite a lot for a young person to navigate. So we do try to help them with that also.
I mean, back when I was playing, football was one of two of my sports that I played growing up until the end of high school. And for me, like that balance was never, ever an issue. So I would play school football, played first 11 from back in the day, what was it, fourth form, so year 10. But obviously the commitment back then was a Tuesday and a Thursday training and a game on the weekend. And then the club stuff, maybe we might have played a game and maybe I went to a practice, but it was never real. It wasn't a necessity to show up, and there wasn't a very strong, clear club football pathway at the time. And so I'm curious for you, growing up in Dublin, playing in Ireland, like did you have the same issues? Like, was football that further ahead than it was down under back in your day, or was this sort of pathway question not even relevant?
Yeah, I think it was very different. When I grew up in Dublin, there was multi sports that we were exposed to as kids. A couple of Irish sports, Gaelic football was one that was quite active in schools, which I played. In terms of in the football space, it was mainly club driven. That there was some school football, which I took part in, but in terms of the pathway for me, it was there was quite a lot of well established football clubs in Dublin. I just from a very, very early age, I got involved in one of them clubs, who kind of, you know, provided everything I needed from a football perspective. Right. And that was kind of my journey, but I'd done multiple sports alongside that growing up, because I just loved playing sports. So anything I could get my hands on, I would.
Was there school football as an option that you decided not to engage in, or did it just didn't exist?
No, I did. I did engage in school football. You know, like for me, club football and school football are very different experiences, and I genuinely believe there is a place for both.
So let's dig into that, because that's super interesting. Like, how do you see those experiences differing?
There is definitely, you know, how do you put it? There's definitely a more social element to school football, and I'm okay with that. You know, the kids want to play with their friends. They want to represent the school. There's some pride involved. They build connections with their friends. You know, if you go to a first 11 school game, for example, on a Friday night, St. Kent's v Sacred Heart, you could see up to 1,000 people at the game. You know, it means something to the kids. And then there's also the social side of where social teams get together and they play, and they just want to play with their friends. They just want to enjoy the game. And then the club experience is probably aimed a little bit more at producing players, at trying to develop them to play at the top level. So they are very different experiences, but there's a place for both. And it frustrates me that the grown-ups have not figured out a way to allow players to do both.
So how are you tackling that challenge? We've spoken about this quite a lot in times gone by when we've got to hang out, but how do you see, you know, navigating that real tricky balance for kids that are playing, you know, for school and for club?
Yeah, it's definitely a really difficult one to navigate, because, you know, whether clubs want to acknowledge it or not, St. Kent's have a huge impact in terms of player development. You know, we probably get more contact points with young people than football clubs. You know, we offer football as a subject in curriculum, year 9, 10 and 11, which is an incredible opportunity for the players. So what I've tried to do is look at my program, make sure I'm providing enough opportunities for players who want to focus on skill, and giving the players who kind of have more of a focus on club, giving them the opportunity to still be a part of the skill environment and the program, but not putting pressure on them to do it. So, you know, I think one of the things we've spoke about in the past, and one of the things I've implemented in the more senior space at the school, is around optional training sessions. So yes, we would have some sessions where collectively we'd be, you know, there'd be an expectation around being there. But a lot of that would be driven by the players as well. I would always engage them around, when do we train? You know, what time do we train at, to make sure they're comfortable with that. And just giving them ownership of the program. And if there's optional sessions and they don't show up, you know, that's okay, because there's a genuinely a good reason why they didn't. And just giving them more ownership of the program.
So I've got a couple of questions. The first one is, do you think that affects their ability to perform on the weekend, showing up to half of the trainings? And secondly, like, what have you experienced in the past that has led you to a place where it's more important to empower the players than it is to, you know, build a fence around your environment, sort of metaphorically speaking?
Yeah. I think it's my responsibility to maximize the time I have with the players, to make sure they're prepared. So, you know, that's my responsibility. So when we do come together collectively, is making sure there's a clear plan, that involves the players, and, you know, they lead part of that plan, and to make sure that we're prepared for the weekend. And I think that can be achievable. You know, for me, I'm a big believer in quality over quantity. You know, you don't need to have players on the training pitch for hours and hours to get your message across. There's various ways you can do it. And, you know, it just helps the players, to they're more engaged if it's in agreement of what you're doing and how you're going to do it.
So I'm hearing that ability to provide some empowerment, to give some choice to the players, actually does lead to them being better prepared and performing better, even though you might only be training 50% of the time of what, you know, other programs might be.
I think if you create a good environment, players will want to be part of it. And if they help you create that environment, I don't think there's anything more powerful. You know, I'm always surprised by the senior players I sit down with. You know, in the last couple of weeks, we sat down around, what does pre-season look like? When are we going to train? And, you know, what I suggested wasn't enough for them. They actually came back to me and said, well, we'd like to do a little bit more. And I think that's a great position to be in.
Yeah. So are you fine having to find additional time during the week? Because my assumption is that, you know, your senior players are probably playing in clubs, training three times a week, and got stuff on the weekend at the minute.
They have. But what I want them to know is that I'm at the college every day. I'm there every morning. I will train them every morning if they want to train. It's my job to you know, provide the platform and the environment for to improve. So I love when they come back to me and say, well, actually, you know, we'd probably like to do a little bit more, and there's a large group of them, and that's pleasing for me as a coach, because it means they want to be in the environment. They want to be here a little bit more, you know. Hopefully they want to be there more than they do at the club. But yeah, I just find sitting down with them groups of players at the beginning of the year and making them part of the plan is super beneficial.
It's interesting that the idea of getting players buying in implies that we're trying to sell something, which I'm not sure I'm particularly comfortable with when it comes to sport. And there's a guy that I have followed for a long time in the marketing space, and he talks about the most important thing is about getting people to enroll in the program if you're trying to teach them something. And so it's actually the responsibility to create a place that's exciting and interesting and useful, and then you're going to get players knocking on the door to come and spend time with you.
Yeah.
As opposed to the big stick that says you must attend X amount of trainings a week. And so, like, for me, one of the big things is about creating that environment of belonging and kids wanting to be in it.
Yeah.
So what do you do in order to create a culture like that?
Again, I would, you know, involve the players. We would always do a workshop around culture at the beginning of the year. You know, it's a topic that hugely interests me. I think it interests a lot of people in sport. There's no right or wrong, so to speak. But you know, as a group, you know, the players would always come up with some ideas around how we measure that culture. And, you know, I would normally relate back to behaviours. So the group would come up with, you know, some behaviours that they wanted encouraged within the group on training days and game days. You know, they would also come up with some behaviours that they felt would be detrimental for the environment. But again, you know, all these were developed by the players. So I'm just facilitating the conversation, right. And they're putting together a bit of a cultural document to kind of hold each other accountable, which is cool.
Is that led by the senior students? Do they typically have experienced that in the past and want it to continue?
Yeah. I think you know, once you get the program to a stage where, you know, the culture is good and the behaviors are, you know, what you're seeing is good, and the senior players you know, like to take up that leadership role, because the group we currently coach is, you know, ranges from year 10 to year 13, you know, senior boys. So you've got a range of people in there with a range of different ideas, and the senior boys like to lead that space.
And so where did you learn or start to believe in this idea of empowerment? Because, you know, and I'm curious as to what your experiences were like playing back in Ireland. Like, was that the type of culture that you experienced yourself in your teams, or has there been other influences, more recent influences, that have affected what you believe as a coach?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've had some very good experiences as a player. I've had some not so good experiences as a player. You know, for me, it's just about taking a little bit of each experience and kind of mixing that up to come up with my own kind of philosophy and style. But yeah, look, I think when I was younger, there was a little bit more of, you know, I'll tell you what to do and you need to do it. I think, you know, the coaches I remember, the ones who had the most impact on me, were the ones who asked me questions, the ones who challenged me around certain situations. You know, didn't give you the answers, but had a great way of probing the answers from you, or guiding you to the answers they wanted. So they're the coaches that, you know, it's not coincidence they're the coaches that have the best impact on you, because they challenge you, they make you think, and that's so important.
Was that something that was apparent at home? As a parent, I think about that philosophy and instilling behaviours and in my kids around being inquisitive, being curious, That's me facilitating questions as opposed to a lot of telling, as you described it. And sometimes that's difficult because, and I've talked about this before on the pod, I get that wrong where I give too much autonomy and that ends up in a bit of chaos. And so was that something that you experienced in your formative years at home? And I was like, oh, I like this. I kind of like this opportunity to explore some things and to figure it out and to be challenged. Or did you learn that outside of the home?
Yeah, I think it was a combination. My parents were great. They are great. A large part of everything I achieved was down to them. But they had a great dynamic as parents and as sporting parents, if you want to call them that. My mom listened. My dad challenged me.
Right.
And it really drove me as a person. You know, I don't have all the answers around parenting. I am a parent myself. I don't know what's the best way and what's not. But
have you adopted more of your mom or your dad's style?
I'd like to think there's a little bit of a balance.
Yeah.
In both. But that would depend on my audience, who I'm coaching to, if that makes sense. I was striving to be a professional football player. If my dad challenged me around what happened in a particular game or training, that just drove me to be better. I probably spent a lot of the time, trying to make him proud. And trying to be, as good as I could be. And I think without having them conversations and without him challenging me at times, maybe I wouldn't have achieved what I did.
Yeah, I'm curious of what that challenge looks like, because I think we can shape challenge a couple of different ways. The first way is more of sort of a negative reinforcement, like you're not good enough, you need to do this better. Like I saw this out there and I thought that was pretty average.
Yeah.
My expectation is that you're better next time.
Yeah.
And then the second way I think about it is, let's have a conversation about what you want, and if I have clarity around that, then my job is to hold you accountable. So if you tell me you want to play for whoever at the highest level of football, then I'm just going to hold you accountable to that goal. It's like that gap between expectation and reality is an interesting place to hang out. So was your dad like, did he kind of sit in one or two of those camps?
Yeah, he did. And like he'd be the first one to tell me when I had a good game.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot to me. But he would also tactfully, he understood the game, so he would tactfully ask me, could I have done this better, or would you change a certain situation that happened in the game? And so it wasn't overpowering. It was just enough to kind of poke me a little bit and make probably at times get a reaction.
Yeah. Did your dad play? Did he play it?
He played a little bit. I don't think at any sort of a high level.
Was there a point in your development where you stopped listening because you had exceeded his level of knowledge, at least the way you perceived that?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Yeah, it's probably, one thing is that I never stop listening to anybody. I'll hear them out and take the bits I need. But right up until I left Ireland, 12 years ago, I don't think my dad missed one of my football games. He traveled to European games.
Yeah.
So he was a large part of my football journey. He didn't overspeak when he had something to say. It made sense.
Yeah.
So
what's your advice? Because my assumption is you have plenty of conversations with parents being in a school environment, and you have that experience of, playing at a pretty high level. Obviously you wanted to go further, but and compared to the majority of kids in New Zealand, you played at a higher level than most of them will ever get to. That's the reality of it, right? And so what are those conversations you have with parents in support of the best parent that they can be?
The kind of niggly conversations probably come from parents who, the outcomes that they want probably don't match sometimes what the child wants, where they're living their dreams through their child at times, and really want them to achieve at the highest level, but you know, what I've found, particularly as a coach over the years, and I've seen it, is that, look, what your outcomes and what you want don't necessarily match the child's or the player, and you need to be okay with that. And I think people struggle with that. And from a parent's perspective, is that, you know, I would say to them, like, just don't forget the reason why they play. You know, they a lot of the reasons they play is just to connect with their friends, be a part of the school environment. So don't put too much pressure on them.
What are the big things that you see, the big issues that we are experiencing currently around keeping players in the game? Like, what, I mean, we know, like, I'm doing a number of little projects with sports around retaining athletes, particularly during the teenage years. Like, there's big drop-offs, typically around the ages of 13 and 14.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing in your environment? What do you put that down to?
I think there's a few things. We do live in a kind of a high praise environment for young people. I think when they stumble across a setback, they struggle with that in terms of resilience, and they can lose the love for the game through an experience like that.
What's an example of a setback? It's pretty prominent in your world.
Not being selected for a particular team that they had their hopes and dreams of being a part of.
That's a massive one, isn't it?
It's massive. And it's unavoidable at times. You know, it's one of them things. I'm always looking at ways to improve it. But at times it's unavoidable. And players struggle with that. I guess from my perspective, it's around, you know, what resources and tools can you put around them young players when they have to deal with disappointment to keep them in the game. You know, we put a huge focus on social football at the college, and the take up from more, you know, teenage students is massive, because they just want to assemble a team with their friends. They want us to facilitate it. They just want to go and play games, and you know, I love that, because they're happy, and you know, I'm just there as a resource. Whatever they need, I can provide for them. If they do want a little bit of coaching, I'll help. Sometimes they don't. They just want to be left alone. So I think, yeah, from my perspective, it's around making sure I have as many different avenues or platforms for players to play in.
So let's dig into this idea, because this is an interesting one for me, around why this idea of social sport, as we brand it, is, you know, a big thing in youth sport today. Like, you see it in basketball as well. Like, I've spoken to lots of people in the basketball space where getting them into organized competitive programs is difficult, but 3 versus 3 out on the courts during lunch hours is just out of control busy. And so I'm curious, is like, what is it about that social environment as we describe it? And I'm curious as to how you would even define what social sport is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these elements in social show up in competitive sport as well. Yeah. So what do you put that down to? Like, why are kids flocking to social sport?
I think they don't want to listen to us anymore. I think a lot of them are bombarded with information. They just want to play the game. There's obviously a massive pull to just connect with their friends. You know, I do believe, even in a social environment, that they want some type of structure from the coaches, but then they want to be left alone to play the game.
So what's the structure for? What is the structure achieving?
Well, I can only speak on what I'm doing in my space. So, you know, coming up soon, we'll be launching, you know, Free Play Tuesday. So I'll be looking to get as many year 9 boys and girls down to the fields on a Tuesday after school. And all I will do is set up some pitches. That's the structure. Give them a ball and let them play. So no coaching, no specific rules apart from the general rules of football. You know, and I've no doubt we'll get huge take up from that, because there's a lot of noise. Kids want to play. Kids, like, I think we regardless of what level you're coaching at, you've got to remember, like, they want to play the game. And You know, I leverage my program a lot on that. You know, I'm aware that 90% of my players are probably getting coached 3 times a week, position specific formations. So I very much try, you know, strip my program back a little bit when they're in my environment and let them play as much as I possibly can.
So I think about like global environments for kids. So say, for example, if we did a Monday to Friday and we looked at everything that a teenager experienced from the moment they got up on Monday to the moment they went to bed on Sunday night, let's do 7 days. Life is so structured and so busy and so controlled, like inside the classroom and a lot of the time at home.
Yeah.
That sport is playing, it's filling the space in the week that just, as you said, just lets them get away and kind of hang out and not be told what to do. But how I think about that, right, is if, would they be more inclined to play competitive sport if the classroom was like free play? You know, so if other areas of their life were less stressful, because maybe it's the fact that competitive sport requires you to be in an environment that's uncertain, that's a bit risky, that's a bit uncomfortable, where you have to grow, where you have to push yourself, where you have to build resilience. And that's just all too much and overwhelming because the rest of life requires that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so that, like, therein lies the paradox for me.
Mm.
On one hand, we have this vehicle called competitive sport, which is actually so useful for growth and learning and all these amazing things. But if we have every one of their environments that's pushing that during the week, like, does that just become overwhelming?
Yeah. I think that's a great point. You know, I don't know, you know, would students still consider school quite regimented at times? And I think
that's education. I mean,
yeah,
I've spoken about this a lot on this podcast before, and I think that's kind of where we're at. Like, it's pretty, it's a pretty compliant environment, education today.
Like, at lunchtime, when I look out my window and I see hundreds of kids playing football in St. Kent's, like, and I mean hundreds of kids, like, all over the place, more than any other sport in the college. And there's no one out there, and there's 50 of them on the one pitch with one ball, like, just looking like they're having the best time of all time. You know, that there's a big message in that, isn't that?
But what I want to be careful that we don't always just label that as social and kind of shits and giggles, because I think there's lots of amazing stuff. Like, this is my skate park analogy, right? If those kids aren't getting better, if there's no perceived sense of competence over time in those environments, do they still keep going back? You know, like, and what do they keep going back for?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think as coaches, we need to, in my environment, like, how we kind of monitor them situations. So, you know, Free Play Tuesday, we'll have a lot of talented kids playing. And it's kind of my job then to make them aware of other opportunities. You know, because maybe that's the gateway for some of them into actually thinking, oh, you know, I must be okay here. The coaches acknowledge me. You know, I might like to progress a little bit with this.
Yeah, I love that idea of it being a gateway. Like, that's the initial spark that creates opportunity, as opposed to having to sign up for the competitive team on Saturday and have all of the things that come with that.
Yeah.
How much of that have you seen? Like, kids just facilitate the opportunity, get kids to play, you know, no control, but enough structure to ensure the game can happen. And then out of that comes these kids are like, hey, I want to play now.
Yeah, I've seen it in a number of environments, and I'm certainly not the first person to be launching a program like this. So, you know, I think people are becoming more aware of the benefits and of social sport and getting them in there. And then, in my environment, it's about, you know, what else can that potentially lead to? You know, yes, there will be some young kids who want to just stay playing social sport, and that's great. You know, my job is to make sure they can continue to do that. But the other hat on is the ones who want to progress, then what avenue can they go into, and making sure that they have a pathway.
Mm. The backyard used to be that place, didn't it? Like, that's where it used to happen, where all of a sudden you know, one of the kids at age 8 was like, wow, this is actually going pretty well for me. I'm beating my brothers and sisters and my cousins, and maybe I should go and explore this opportunity a little bit more.
Yeah. Now that and that, like, that's how we grew up. Street football, I played outside from the moment there was daylight till the moment it got dark. You know, we just used street poles or jumpers for goals. You don't see that much anymore, as much.
There's a lady on the podcast a while ago now, and I talk about this a lot as well. It's a key principle of mine, and she talked about play leading to practice. Not the other way around, but we live our lives these days where we start with practice. You know, we sign our kids up for piano lessons and they have to go and practice.
Yeah.
It's like, where's the joy in that?
let them explore.
Yeah.
Let
like, so what does the free play piano experience looks like?
Yeah.
Because that's what we need.
Probably doesn't sound great.
No, but that's probably Big Brother playing, in the room at home, and younger sisters listening longer, and then having a bit of a crack, and those types of environments are really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Is that a push for you in terms of exposing more kids to more opportunities where they can just play?
We provide structured training sessions. They've got in curriculum classes. So now it's a little bit for me around what else can we bolt onto that, because there'll be some young players who come to them structured training sessions with a coach that will still be crying out for that opportunity to come on a Tuesday after school and just play. So I think it's finding a balance. So
is that a case for, if we think about that week, that they're actually not getting enough play in their week, and so they're seeking it out through, whether they're aware of this or not, I'm not sure, but like there's this sort of intuitive need just to go and play.
Yeah, and I think they'll seek that out regardless of your help or not. But you know, it's difficult for me because they're all connected to different environments, but I can just look at my own and make sure I have structured opportunities and non-structured opportunities for kids to access. And I think if I can get a good balance with that, I think that's the most important thing for me, is making sure they have unstructured opportunities, because there's a large amount of kids want that. So I just need to make sure I have them opportunities.
Yeah. I love the idea of transitioning in and out of less and more structured environments based on, you know, where a student might be at in their year, or in their college experience, et cetera, et cetera. Like maybe they're more willing to enter a more structured environment where the rest of their time is not so structure heavy. And vice versa, because that's the thing, right? We tend to, particularly the kids that are conditioned, if that's the right word, to achieving, all of a sudden every one of the domains of their life is shaped in a way that we're working towards an outcome here.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing, you know, I'm curious as to whether you see this as well, is the kids that are really good at preparing are often the ones that struggle to play because of a lack of freedom in who they are and their approach. Like, so very good trainers, through being conditioned into how to do the work, like have the plan, do the work, repeat, rinse, et cetera, et cetera. And then you see them on Saturday and they can't adapt, and they can't play with freedom because there's too much relying on the outcome, or, you know, like there's too much of this straight line way of experiencing development.
Yeah. You know, players do come into my environment and I don't know, how would you describe it? That they're a little bit programmed.
Yeah.
You know, like I...
I think that's the biggest risk in youth sport. Like, I'm seeing it so much. Yeah. And it's just restricting their ability to go forth in the sport, but also just to go forth in life. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, no. I think, and this is just what I see, so I'm not speaking for everybody, but I see a lack of creativity in young people now, young players. You know, I guess some players coming into my environment and you know, they might be getting messages around, this is how you play the game. When you get it, you pass it quickly. You move, you get it back, you pass it quickly. And this player could be really good at dribbling the ball. You know, so I think we need to embrace the individual as a player a little bit more, encourage creativity, you know, allow them to make more mistakes when they're younger. And, you know, obviously that comes for you from your environment. But yeah, I do see players coming in and I'm thinking, you know, it looks like he's been given a consistent message all the time and he's delivering that to a T. And, you know, is that really what he wants to do, or is that really what he's good at? You know, I think there's more there.
If we were to split development up into football specific skills, tactics, character, all of these like organizational skills, like I'm just kind of listing off a whole bunch of things that come to mind. Is there anything that you kind of put at the top of your list of going like, if I can do this for my kids, then everything else is easier?
Yeah, and it's probably the most difficult thing to coach. and this is just my environment. You know, I've got great kids. They're fortunate. They go to a private school in Auckland. I've often, you know, you look at some of them and, you know, technically good footballers, you know, good actions, you know, tick a lot of boxes. But then my struggle with that little bit of edge, that little bit of mental toughness at times, for the ones who want to kick on to the next level of the game, so to speak. So, you know, that's a difficult one to coach, because it's no fault of any of the players. You know, you're a product of your own environment, and 90% of them are from really good environments. And, you know, they've probably not had to deal with a lot of struggles or a lot of disappointments. They've probably not, you know, wanted for lots of stuff. So for me, it's like, you know, when things get difficult for them in games, or, you know, the environment gets a little bit tricky, you know, how do I help them through that? You know, how do we give them skills to navigate that? Because for the ones, you know, the ones I've seen in New Zealand who've kind of kicked on to that next level are the ones that had that bit of mental toughness, a bit of edge. You know, they embraced chaos in games. They physically met challenges head on. They're probably the little things. And look, we I tried to be proactive in that space. You know, we've started to bring stuff into the classroom. You know, we've entrusted external people to come in and help us with that mental side of the game, which is so important. You know, it's not an area I'm skilled in, so, you know, I've definitely seeked out help around that, just to make sure, you know, holistically I think we're supporting the players.
If we go back to when you were playing, was this an area that that was a strength for you, or that you really struggled in, or kind of, you know, sort of middle of the road?
So, you know, when I grew up, we had millions of kids striving to get to England. And pretty much if you weren't in the UK by the time you were 18 or 19, you were considered a failure. So, you know, I was 19 or 20 before I actually got to the UK to play professionally. But the environment was so competitive and so tough that if you didn't have that mental edge, you know, that was the difference between you probably going to the UK and not, because and if you look at the UK, it's 10 times worse. You've got millions of kids striving to get into, you know, professional environments, and you know, they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there.
Yeah, that was the clear difference I saw when I spent some time in Arsenal in their academy. And
yeah.
And I'm sure all of those environments from that point of view are similar. Like the intensity and the internal competitiveness between the boys was just unreal.
Yeah.
Something I've never seen in any New Zealand environment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I love New Zealand. I've been here now for a long time. You know, I would describe the football as a little bit of a bubble. And, you know, the even when I was in Australia, you know, some of the best things I've seen and the best experiences I've had with young players is when we've been able to transition them into a different environment for a period of time. You know, we had one really talented player involved in the program when I was in Australia, and you know, we managed to send him to Aston Villa for 3 or 4 weeks. And the difference in them young people when they come back from that experience is incredible. You know, regardless of whether they go on and play football professionally or not, it just opens their eyes to actually how competitive it is, you know, what else is out there. And, you know, they're kind of life-changing experiences for young players. But it's quite difficult to expose large amounts of young players to that environment.
Yeah, I think it can fuel a real, or it can spark a real fire as well. You know, it might just be exactly what's needed to, you know, provide, like, because a little bit of a success in an environment like Aston Villa for 3 weeks, maybe I can compete.
Yeah.
Maybe I do have what it takes, if only I kind of ramp things up a little bit. Or if only, you know, I get a little bit more creative. Hopefully it's not always about just kind of grinding hard, squeezing some more juice out of the lemon. Because I think that's another thing that I'm seeing more and more of, is like this mentality that if you want to make it, just got to go harder and harder and harder. That's like that through doing more and going harder, we're going to get to success. I'm not sure whether that's always the case. So we need other elements of the developmental experience that allows that to happen. So that the mental game for you, like, outside of specific experiences that, you know, you might be able to get kids into, are there any specific tools or tactics that have worked for you inside your school environment?
I think, you know, you can create a training environment as well that's a little bit uncomfortable for young players, the ones who are striving to get to the next level. Through them different activities, you can look at developing some of that resilience. So yeah, that, like, you know, I'd look to do that through various training practices, you know, challenging them, more advanced players in different situations, making things a little bit more difficult for them. So yeah, you just got to be creative around doing that. I certainly don't have all the answers of how to do it. You know, there's different things around training that I would try implement, trial and error. It's about identifying the needs of each of them individual players you have as well, and making sure it's not a blanket approach to making it difficult for everybody. So putting different challenges around different individuals, the ones who I know really want to do everything they can to succeed in the game. It's important that I challenge them and be mindful that there's other people in the group also.
Because that could be another approach that, you know, schools can take. Sounds like that you think a little bit in the space around the development of the individual. So these guys are going to go, and these girls are going to go and play in the club, and maybe the school program is about identifying the pieces of development that we can help the most with.
Yeah.
Because I think schools, if anything, could align themselves to things like pedagogy and the idea of scaffolding learning, because you have this time with them and you see them over a number of years. You can think about like what happens at year 7 versus what happens at year 13. So like I'm hearing environments that you've created where kids can work on the things that potentially they're not getting help with elsewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like if you look at the school environment, if you look at the education system, like we are developing individuals, you know, we're trying to educate them in the best way we can. And I think that needs to filter down into the sports programs as well. So yeah, look, I definitely, it's a lot of work to with a program of my size. But I'm quite lucky that I have a lot of contact points with the players throughout the day and throughout the week. And, you know, a lot of that kind of helping them as individuals is having conversations with them regular, which probably in the club space they don't get as much of an opportunity as I would. You know, I can catch up with players regularly at lunchtime, and we can sit down, and you know, kids are clever, they're smart, you know, they know the things they want to get better at, and then it's kind of, yeah, my responsibility to put some tools around that to help them.
It's a cool space for schools to involve into, is like, what does this look like from an individual point of view as opposed to a team? Because for so long, that's the way that we've thought about team sports, is team first, you know, how we're going to play, and the expectation of what players do within the team. Like, we've been doing that for a long time, but I think, you know, even if you didn't have team practice, it would be interesting if you ran a complete individualized development program and then just turned up on Saturday and played. as to what that would, it's like sort of taking either that model or even just their complete free play model. As you mentioned earlier, like, they're not experiencing those in isolation, they're getting structure from other parts of their lives, be it in sport or outside of sport. And then showing, what would you lose if you ran a model that was just all free play, so just facilitated environments of some structure but zero control, so no adult intervention, and then you turned up on Saturday and play? Like, what do you think you'd lose or gain?
it's a good question. You know, I think in that kind of more performance space, which the Forced 11 kind of operate in, I guess, you know, you'd come up against tactically prepared teams.
Right.
You know, you might lose an element there, but, you know, I think going back to your earlier point, like, if you ran a model where you're just improving individuals, I think if you improve enough individuals, it's going to feed into a pretty reasonably good team. So, yeah, look, it's not something that I've really tried, but, you know, I think you'd probably gain a lot from buy-in from the players, in terms of if you let them rock up in free play, because I think there's an element of every young player that wants to just play. So it'd be an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe you would lose some of the brotherhood that's created when the team comes together, or the sisterhood when the girls come together. We did some research a little while ago that I've spoken about on the pod before, where we looked at First 15 Rugby and we interviewed some of the boys, and they talked to the brotherhood as being one of the things that, you know, are the big reasons as to why they play. But what they also spoke about was a lot of that brotherhood was created off the field. And so you could still run those experiences where the team gets together, but it's not football. It's whatever else you can do to go and have a bit of fun with your mates, right?
Yeah, and from my experience in the school environment, that's probably where the best connections are formed, when it's got absolutely nothing to do with football. You know, we'll meet, have a breakfast, watch a Champions League game before school, and you can see that's where the players form the connections, and that's obviously super powerful then when you bring that into the team environment. But yeah, I think football is one way, but there's lots more fun ways for them to kind of form that brotherhood, which is cool.
Yeah. Is there anything that you've changed your mind on since, you know, being at St. Kent's, like something that you took in at the start and were pretty adamant was the way forward, and now you look back and think, you know what? I've done a complete 180 on that idea now, and you know, things have changed.
Yeah, look, I don't know if I would say it would use the word change, but I've, you know, I've definitely evolved as a coach, 100%. You know, I came from a kind of professional background. You know, there was a lot of structure involved. You know, as a professional player, you're told where to be and what time to be there. So you can become a little bit robotic around the whole thing. So I've definitely evolved in terms of getting the players way more involved in what I do. And it's I've seen the results of it. So I've definitely put more of a focus on, you know, a player-led program. I think, you know, when I first got into coaching, I was probably definitely doing more of the I'll tell you what to do. But over the years of being in that youth space as well, I've learned heaps. But definitely the biggest thing for me is around, you know, making sure your environment is engaging, and the players, you know, are part of the plan.
Mm.
I've definitely went down that alleyway.
And do you recall any sort of significant influences in terms of that kind of evolution of yours over time? Like, has that just been a response to things not working, or can you call out, you know, particular people or experiences that you've had that have led to that evolution?
Yeah, I think I've had a few different experiences, you know, and even on my own coaching journey, I was always a big believer in just throwing myself in at the deep end and kind of learning on the job. And some coaches would be afraid to do that, and they want to be safe and take roles that they know they can manage. I've never done that. You know, I remember not too long ago when I kind of was transitioning from playing into coaching, and you know, I took over kind of head coach duties with Thackeray United, which was a National League team. And I remember I went in there and I was putting training sessions together, and I was putting them together based on my experiences, because this is what I'd done and this is what I'd done in a professional environment. And the reality was, where, you know, the audience I had at the time, they weren't professional football players, you know, and that really challenged me thinking around, you know, for me, the biggest mistake I've made and the biggest mistake I see with coaches is not understanding the audience they're coaching to. And you have to be flexible if you want to maximize the group of players that's in your environment. So they would have been my biggest learnings, is like, what I've done is gone, you know, take the good parts, but you know, what it is young people need right now in the current landscape to help them improve or just to make their experience a better one.
It's a fascinating point and a super hard one to do, is to put our experiences aside, knowing that they've worked for us in the past, and sort of meet everybody where they're at as they show up, because kids are different to what they were. And mainly, I think mainly because of the environments that they're spending time in, they're getting influenced in different ways. I mean, technology obviously is a big one that comes to mind, but it's not the only one. Still humans, still have a lot of the same biology that we had when we were that age, but how that manifests, how that shows up in their behaviors is different.
Yeah.
So what's your advice to coaches that are in the youth space in order to become better at doing that?
You know, don't push your beliefs onto the kids to begin with. You know, I think it's a natural instinct as a coach that you want to improve everybody. You know, you want people to play at the highest level possible within your sport. I think that's a natural thing for a coach to want to do, regardless of what they say. But you know, you need to be okay that there's lots of people in your environment that don't want the same thing as you. And you have to be at peace with that, and you have to make sure they have a really good experience. So that, you know, that'd be one of the biggest pieces of advice I have. And that's just based on my own experiences, is, you know, understand the audience that you're coaching to, and you know, what can you do to get the best from that group?
Is that spending time with kids, just hanging out and listening to what they have to say, asking questions, like developing relationships? Like, is that a priority that you actually structure into your program, that these experiences are going to happen and I'm just going to observe and take notes and learn and respond accordingly? Or do you just sort of pick these types of things up by the time that you spend in the football specific types of environments?
Yeah, look for me, you know, I try to build as many connections as I can with the young players in my environment. You know, like I think you spoke earlier about, you know, some of the key like nutrients to a learning environment, and you know, trust is massive for young people. you know, they have to know that they can come into my environment and express themselves. And that might not always be with a football. You know, they might want to chat to their mates at times. So they need to be comfortable. And I think that comes with time. We're checking in on them, you know, passing them in the schoolyard, making sure they're okay. And eventually that, you know, that will lead to trust. And I think, you know, there's nothing more, you know, it's just great to see when young people come into your environment and you can see that they're being the best versions of themselves and they're not afraid to try new things. And for me, that's a good measure of a good environment. But yeah, it takes time to build that.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, going back to your point around the mental game and the resilience that arguably we need more of, I mean, that's founded on trust, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like kids aren't going to go and risk, you know, looking silly in front of their friends, making mistakes when there's pressure coming from home. Like that's just not going to happen unless they've got Brian in the corner, you know, that they can trust that you've got their back.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of other coaches make that job easier for me because, you know, the amount of coaches that still shout and scream from the touchlines on at young kids is incredible. And parents included in that as well. And, you know, I pride myself on not doing that. You know, and I think that breaks trust. You know, you've got to be really clever with your communication with young people. And you know, who wants to listen to someone shouting and screaming at them on the touchline? And that's still prominent in the game. Probably not as much as it was.
Yeah, that contradiction in behaviour is a big one, isn't it? Be it a coach, be it a parent. I know that one's for sure, is saying one thing, doing something else.
Yeah.
They see through that straight away.
Yeah, if you're not leading by example and you know, sharing the same values as them, then you know you're wasting your time.
So what do you see in the future, you know, for you as a coach, or potentially down another road to explore? Like what is it that you're excited about over the next, you know, few years?
Yeah, I actually recently spoke to a friend around this, and I think as coaches and as people, we're very guilty of searching for the next thing, especially coaches. You know, the grass is greener somewhere else, and I need to be operating in this space for my own development.
Particularly the high performance next thing, right? Yeah. Like that seems to be the place where everyone, well, not everyone, but a lot of people won't end up. And we lose great people from development because they're lured. And sometimes for completely understandable reasons.
But yeah, I'm not looking to go down that alley at the moment. I'm really enjoying where I'm at. Like I'm enjoying it because I find it challenging. You know, I remember even, you know, getting the role of St. Kent's, and the I looked at the program and I was like, this is a big program, and I'm left alone to run it. So there's a huge responsibility on my shoulders because, you know, I want to make sure that if we do leave the program, that I leave it in a very healthy space and I leave it better than I found it. But I'm happy where I am. You know, for me, the next few years is you know, what can I implement into the program that's different? What can I implement into the program that's going to help the kids moving forward? And I'm in a pretty powerful position to be able to, powerful and challenging position to be able to look at, you know, new ways to do things. And yeah, I'm really enjoying that at the moment, and I'm still learning heaps because
I'm sure,
you know, you I've been in the youth development space for a little while, but, you know, before that, I was a professional football player in a professional environment for a long time, nearly 20 years. So, yeah, I'm learning new stuff every day, which I love.
So think about that legacy that you spoke of. What would we see if you were to, you know, talk about leaving it in a better space from when you started? Like, And I know criteria for success can be challenging in development because it's not about trophies in the cabinet only.
Yeah.
Let's not gear our programs around that and only that, but it can't not be a piece of the puzzle. That being said, like, do you have criteria for success that in 5 years we could look back on and say, hey, like, this is better because we can see these things that are happening?
Yeah, look, I think the obvious answer is that, like, more people are playing the game because I've developed various programs that kids can access regardless of what their aspirations are. And it's not, when you look at the program, it's not channeled towards high performance or that performance phase. Is that there's a wide variety of programs in place for kids to be able to play the game.
At St. Kent's, is there space for that to happen? Like, are there kids doing nothing? Because I think, you know, like, when we think about participation numbers, we can easily get into competition with other sports.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, and this is the thing, like, there's an overwhelming number of sports out there, isn't there?
Yeah.
And everybody's talking about acquisition and retention.
Yeah.
It's like, are there enough kids to go around?
Yeah, probably not. But, you know, there's so many great sports on offer at the colleges. You know, I know from my perspective, we actively encourage the football players to do as many as they can. You know, we step aside during the summer to allow them to concentrate on summer sport. You know, what you will find with the more keen, so to speak, football players is that they will just focus on football.
Yeah.
So, you know, they'll be knocking on your door looking for training to restart.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that makes complete sense to me. In a school environment, I'm just thinking about this now, like, the criteria for participation success should be across sports.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it? Like, yeah. It should be.
Yeah.
And some, perhaps you identify a kid in football that you think might be better suited for basketball for whatever reason.
Yeah.
We should be encouraged to actually pass the baton in that sense, shouldn't we?
100%. And, you know, we've actually, codes have shared players, so to speak, very talented players over the years. And, you know, we recently we had a really talented basketball player and first 11 football player. So, you know, yeah, as coaches, we collaborate around how do we make this an enjoyable experience for the student, because he wants to do both.
I'm not sure that there's many organizations that are doing that, right, particularly in club land, because every sport is out there. And I got an email in my inbox the other day inviting me to, expose on another sport, another new sport. It's like, where are you going to get your kids from? You know, like, it's...
Yeah. There's probably not enough collaboration between clubs and schools. That's the reality of it. And that's another area that needs to be improved.
We either have to collaborate or we have to reduce the time that we are asking of our kids inside our sport. Now, I think if I think about development from an exploration point of view, that's valuable. But not from a sense of belonging and meaning point of view. Yeah. And I think that's the bit that we're at risk of going wide, like big breadth and losing depth. I think we're at risk of kids not developing relationships with the game and the people within it, which is what, if I think about my experience in sport, that's what retained me.
Mm.
It was the fact that I saw myself as part of the football tribe or part of the athletics tribe.
Yeah.
And that meant time and deepness and meaning and all that stuff. So I'm thinking about these ideas at the moment because retention is kind of at the top of the list for lots of sports at the minute. It's a challenge.
No, for sure. Yeah, like, I think, you know, going back to your earlier one about success, is I think that's one element of it is having an accessible program. But, you know, on a personal level, it would be bumping into a student in 6 years' time.
Yeah.
In a bar somewhere, having a beer and actually saying, shit, you were a good coach, you know, I really enjoyed the environment, and I'm still involved in the game in some way. You know, that's what I love. And, you know, I love staying connected with the students who leave the school and go on to do, you know, a big avenue at the moment, the scholarships into the USA, and just staying connected with them and seeing where their journey goes. And, you know, it's good to play a small part in that.
Yeah, I think I had someone on the podcast a little while ago, and they talked about whether or not, like, trying to get every student onto the invite list for your 40th birthday, for their 40th birthday. Like, so you get invited to that.
Yeah.
Not that you could have 29 teams worth of kids.
Yeah.
Inviting you to their 40th. But yeah, I mean, it's a great thought experiment. Like, what would it take? What would it take to have an impact on a young person in order for them to invite you to their 40th birthday?
Yeah. Yeah. I think no matter what you do, not everyone would invite you.
Of course not. Yeah. It's you know, it's giving yourself the best shot at it would be
a nice
philosophy.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's rocket science to achieve that. You know, I think it's an inclusive environment that players want to be in and they enjoy it. You know, regardless of whether things have gone great or not so great.
We make it hard for ourselves, I think, you know, like, because of the retention's falling.
Yeah.
You know, in every sport, like, those numbers aren't healthy. And so, yeah. It's a challenge. In your opinion, what is youth sport for?
Youth sport, I would say first and foremost, it's definitely to create a sense of belonging for young people. I think they want to be part of something. It's an incredible opportunity to forge relationships and connections with other young people. I think they're the two key things for me. I think there's other things you could bolt onto that, but for me, yeah, sense of belonging is massive, and just, yeah, the developing relationships and connections with other people.
Love it. Well, Brian, I appreciate you taking some time coming on the podcast, and you're all the best.
All good. Thank you.